Case number 22-3600, Beaver Street Investments, LLC, et al., v. Summit County, Ohio. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Warren D. Mendehall for the appellant.
Good morning. My name is Warner Mendenhall, and I represent Beaver Street Investments, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal time. The question today is when the statute of limitations for federal properties takings begins to accrue under the land bank procedure in Ohio. And right off the bat, the county itself, in its motion to reinstate the case and its order to reinstate the case, state, these are exhibits 13-1 and 13-2, that the 28-day statutory redemption period expired January 21st, 2020. Because the statute of limitations for a 1983 case is 2 years, and because we filed before that date, we filed timely. That's our essential argument. And the county
claimed that. I got a couple questions that are related to that to just get out of the way in the beginning. If we look to the end of the redemption period, I agree with you that the county made this a little bit confusing by seemingly changing the redemption period. But if we put that off to the side for just a second, the board issues its order, and then within I think it was either 26 or 27 days later, your client files a bankruptcy petition, right?
Correct.
I just assume from looking at this, at least in part, the purpose of that bankruptcy petition was to stay the redemption period by virtue of the automatic stay. Am I right about that?
Absolutely.
Now, in looking at the bankruptcy petition, and I just want to make sure that I'm reading this correctly, in looking at listing the various debts, there's a debt that involves Kristen M. Scalise versus. That is the case we're talking about here, isn't it?
That's the county debt, the tax debt, yeah.
The tax debt, the one that was adjudicated by the board.
Yes.
Because what's confusing in the bankruptcy petition, it references under court, the Court of Common Pleas of Summit County. There really wasn't anything in the Court of Common Pleas, was there? It was
It's the Board of
Revision. The Board Act.
Bankruptcy attorney, I don't know whether he was before the Board of Revision or not, but he got that wrong.
So anyway, to the extent it's relevant one way or the other, the action of the board was significant enough to trigger not only to put your client on notice, but to trigger a bankruptcy petition.
Absolutely.
All right.
We wanted to stop that foreclosure process. And so
the other thing I wanted to know, just in relation to that, is once the board issues its order, as I understand the case law, particularly Harrison, we're supposed to look at whether that's a final decision. Now, I understand the argument about how the redemption period means it isn't final. I get that. But what I'm trying to figure out from looking at the statute, which I don't find answers this as clearly as it might, was there any action, was there any further action that this board had to take, the board itself, beyond the one that they took?
Yes, there is. Revised Code 323.65, which is the land bank portion, and then there's Revised Code 323.78. And that's the second part of that, is that the board shall order this. And they have to issue that order to the sheriff in order to accomplish that transfer. That order didn't come out until the end.
Did the board issue that order, or did the clerk issue that order?
The board issued the order to the clerk. And that exhibit is 13-2. It says, this is the Board of Revision upon motion of the plaintiff for good cause shown. The case is reinstated to the Board of Revision's active docket, and the board further finds that the 28-day statutory redemption period has expired as of January 21st, 2020. So as of January 21st, according to the board's own order, and according to the way this works under the .78, 323.78, they had to issue this order. They did, and they set the redemption period. My client.
So you argue that second board order is what triggers the statute?
It's the second step in a process.
Let me finish the question.
Sorry.
Are you arguing it's the second board order that starts the statute, or the end of the redemption period established by that second board order?
I'm going to argue it a couple of different ways. First of all, I think that Summit County was correct that the redemption period is 28 days and that it was stayed until they got a motion for relief from stay from the bankruptcy court. That's correct. And then the second part of their process, first they have an adjudication. I believe that was in June of 2019, but then they have to have the order. There's two parts to this under the statutory scheme. That's why I'm pointing to 323.78. They have to issue that order to the clerk for the sheriff to transfer that deed. The deed actually transfers, I believe, a few days later than that, by the 30th or 31st of January. But the redemption period...
I don't think you're answering the question.
I'm sorry.
Are you saying it's the second board order that triggers the statute, or the beginning of the end of the redemption period established by the second board order, or are you arguing the alternative?
It's the end of the redemption period, and the board order recognized when that end of the redemption period was.
All right. I didn't ask you why. I just asked you, which is it? And you say it's the end of the redemption period.
It's
yes or no. Is it the end of the redemption period or isn't it?
It is the end of the redemption period.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
In struggling with understanding how this statute works, is the distinction here that you somewhat make in your briefs, the distinction between ripeness in a case and the actual initiation of the statute of limitations? I'm wondering, is it possible, is the background of your argument that the takings claim becomes ripe when the county issues its adjudication of foreclosure, but the statute of limitations itself does not begin to run until after the redemption period has ended, because until the redemption period has ended, there is not a complete taking because the owner of the property has the right to keep the property by paying the debt? Is that the distinction?
It's confusing. I think the clearest way to argue this is that when there's a take, which that take occurs by operation of law, this gets back to the redemption period a little bit, the operation of law of that take is 28 days after that redemption period, which the county set and the county admitted to and the county put in its order. The county established the redemption period. My client knew that he had 28 days. And when that redemption period ran on January 21st, there was no way for him to get new financing, get new investors, come up with the amount of tax. There was lots of things he could do right up till January 21st, which the county admits. They would not have transferred that deed to the county after the 21st if my client had done any one of those actions, including filing a bankruptcy or another bankruptcy. So there's many, many things that the client can do up until the 21st. Now, there is a ministerial action that has to happen after that redemption period runs. That final ministerial action is that Board of Revision must provide an order to the clerk to get the sheriff to transfer that property.
And it's that, is your argument that it really doesn't matter how we got to that date, which is January 21 of 2020,
right?
It doesn't matter how we got to that
date.
It is the process and the action of the BOR in issuing that order that then initiates.
Because
that is, in fact, the final taking.
That is the final taking. That property is gone. And the Harrison case is...
But before you get into the Harrison case, I just want to go back to what the conversation you and I were having. You described two different orders of the board. And in answer to Judge Strand's question, you just talked about an order of the board, but you described it as a ministerial act. Is that the second order of the board that you and I were talking about that you're describing as ministerial?
No. The ministerial act is the redemption period runs. After that, my client can do nothing. The Board of Revision didn't issue its order yet, but my client can do nothing. Everybody knows that redemption period's run. My client knows it. The Board of Revision knows it. The county knows it. There's still one more process to go through. That's the final process, which is under the 323.78. They have to issue that order. So then they...
Three orders. It's the third one that you're describing as ministerial.
That's right. There's an adjudication...
Thank you.
...that has a process, that creates that 28-day redemption period. And then following that redemption period running, there has to be an order to actually transfer that deed. And Harrison is clear. It says only when the board transferred the property to the land bank did Harrison have a ripe takings claim. Before then, the county had not reached a final decision. The transfer occurs by operation of law at the conclusion of the redemption period. That's the point. That it's just like you had a deed. We created a deed in my office for somebody, and it's sitting there, and I don't file it for a week. That occurs by operation of the close of that redemption period of 28 days.
Well, I see you're out of time.
I am out of time, Your Honor.
I'll take some of your rebuttal time. But
all right.
We'll
thank you very much.
Have your rebuttal. Morning.
Morning. May it please the court, Stephen Funk of Retzel and Andrews on behalf of Pelley Summit County. As we've talked about, this case presents a takings claim that's based upon the same legal theory that was the subject of the case in Harrison, as well as tariff-free properties, which is another decision decided by this court. And while we certainly dispute the merits of the claim, what we're here to talk about today is the statute of limitations and whether the district court erred in finding that the Summit County Board of Revision issued its final decision in the tax foreclosure action when it issued its adjudication of foreclosure, which was the final judgment entered in the tax
foreclosure. But Harrison was not actually considering the statute of limitations. Isn't that correct?
That's right. But in this case, Your Honor, they have, in their briefs and in the proceedings below, they did not present any arguments that the statute of limitations standard was different than the ripeness standard. All of their arguments are based upon ripeness. Every single one of their arguments is based upon the ripeness standard. And as this court held in Harrison, the final decision is the standard. And in the final decision standard, you look at when did the administrative agency issue its final decision applying the regulations. Now, in this case, the regulation is a statute.
I'm trying to follow what you're saying. Excuse me for interrupting you.
Yeah, no problem.
Saying they only talked about ripeness. You're not trying to say that they waived or relinquished or forfeited their arguments about statute of limitations or anything like that, are you?
Not entirely. My argument would be that they waived any argument that statute of limitations, that the trial court erred by applying ripeness in deciding when the cause of action accrued. Their arguments were based upon ripeness.
Why you think this ripeness, I don't mean to digress to a minor issue, why you think this ripeness point is significant?
Well, I think it goes to Judge Strantz's question, which is essentially statute of limitations, I would argue, is probably more deferential to our point of view, which is when did the party know or have reason to know of the takings claim? With respect to...
Well, of course, with due respect, I mean, parties can know that they have a legal dispute arising or pending and all of that without knowing when it's come to fruition or when legal rights might be relinquished or need to be asserted. So that really doesn't answer anything either, does it?
I think it does, Your Honor, because in this situation... When the board issued its final decision, that was a judgment. That was a judgment that ordered the transfer of the property in lieu of a sale. At that point in time, they knew that the alleged taking had been ordered by the board. The regulations had been applied to the board.
Yeah, but the legal force and effect of the board's order would go down the drain if they exercised their rights of redemption during the redemption period. So the board's action in that regard was not the definitive end of the whole matter.
Well, it was in the sense that the adjudication of the rights and the order of the transfer had occurred on the board's decision. And the statute, 323.78B, says that no further action is required to effectuate the transfer. And so in this case, the parties would have known or had reason to know that the transfer had been ordered by the board, and that was the final decision that ordered the transfer that would have, and I think it was pointed out by Judge McKeague, would have put them on notice that that taking had been ordered. That's why they filed the bankruptcy petition.
But in my discussion with your colleague, Mr. Mendenhall, we've framed this as essentially three different actions by the board. I mean, if I use board order 1, 2, and 3, you're going to know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I understand.
And I think even Mr. Mendenhall agrees we can ignore the third one because he describes that as just ministerial. So it seems to come down to whether it's the first order of the board or that starts all this, or whether it's the second order that he says was required by statute in order for the taking to occur. So do you agree or disagree with that?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. And I have two answers to that question. The first, more direct, is that order was just first of all, they didn't argue that below, that the second order was somehow a final decision. That order was simply putting it, reactivating, in light of the bankruptcy stay, to just make it clear that the alternative redemption period had expired. But that didn't change the fact that the final decision that actually ordered the transfer occurred on June 3rd, 2019. That was the final judgment.
The so-called first order.
That's right. So at this point, we're only talking about implementing the judgment. That's why it's ministerial.
So how do you, I mean, I think following up on what Judge Clay asked you, how do you close the loop to say that the first order was the time the property was taken? Because that's the language, correctly or incorrectly, used in Harrison.
Right, because that's the final decision, applying the regulations to the property. So at that point in time, the parties knew or should have known that the property had been ordered to be transferred in lieu of a sale. And that's what they're saying is the taking. Not that just the transfer itself, but just the actual decision to order a transfer rather than a sale. And that's what ultimately deprived them, under their legal theory, of
well, that order doesn't impact or affect the redemption period, does it?
It orders it subject to the redemption period, but the rights are adjudicated at that moment in time. And that's also under the statute, the time in which the time to appeal would accrue as well. Under the statute, there is a right to appeal to the Court of Common Pleas. That has to be done within 14 days of the date that the order is issued. So at that point in time, if they wanted to appeal, they had to have done that within 14 days. The reason for that is the court wants the state, the General Assembly, wants all the rights adjudicated prior to an actual transfer. So that to the extent you want to file an appeal, you have to do that within 14 days of the final decision.
But then what I'm struggling with is the relationship between the rightness idea and the statute of limitations idea, which may not be dispositive in this case, because the undergirding issue here is whether the transfer actually had to occur pursuant to the BOR's order. Wouldn't you say that is the issue?
Well, I think that the issue is, when did they know or have reason to know under the statute of limitations analysis that the property in order to be transferred in lieu of sale. If you look at their complaint, that's what they're complaining about.
But how can it be transferred in lieu of sale, actually transferred and no longer available to this party, if this party has a 28-day right of redemption? And isn't that why you don't transfer it until that time period has run? Is because you are not in the position to say that you actually own the property as a governmental entity and can transfer it until the 28 days are over.
Because the standard for statute of limitations is, when did they have reason to know that the transfer had been ordered in lieu of sale? That's their theory for what the taking is. At that point in time, they would have known that at the time of the final decision standard. And that final decision occurred on June 3rd, 2018.
And tell me how that qualifies as finality. That's what I'm struggling with. Did they make the decision? Did they want to do that? Yes. But the question is, how does it become final, particularly in light of Harrison's discussion of the federal takings claim depends on the final decision, but only when the board transferred the property to the land bank did Harrison have a right takings claim, because before then, the county had not reached a final decision to seize title to her land,
okay,
which sounds to me like finality is when they issue that last order following redemption.
And if you read on in that decision, Harrison, twice the court says that the finality occurred when there was a final decision in which the board adjudicated the foreclosure in order to transfer in lieu of sale. They said that twice on pages 650 and 651.
So is the final decision of the board then what we've described as the first decision, which is what you're arguing, or the second decision, which your colleague says is required by the statute?
Well, it's not required by the statute. The statute's very clear that it's the adjudication or foreclosure that is the final judgment. So these are all post-judgment issues that arose. The final judgment was issued on
June 3rd. Are you describing the second one? Is just implementation of the first one?
That's right. So let me give you a good example of this.
What are you claiming? If the property owner exercises their redemption rights during the redemption period, what does that do to the board's order? Does that mean that the board's order then becomes a nullity, or what's the legal import of the exercising their redemption rights in relation to that order? What does that do to the order? Since you say the order is final, and you make it sound like it's irrevocable and overrides everything, but if they exercise their redemption right, what then is the status of the order?
Well, again, it's subject to they exercise their rights pursuant to the order. So they satisfied what the order...
Well, the order doesn't say anything about their redemption rights.
Yes, it does.
What does it say?
The adjudication of foreclosure invokes the alternative right of redemption period and specifically says that the property will be transferred upon the expiration of the 28 days. So it orders that transfer pursuant to the statute. It applies the regulations to the statute and issues a final judgment. That's the judgment that terminates the proceeding that ultimately is appealable to the Court of Common Pleas within 14 days. It's no different than a court judgment in a foreclosure action in which the court orders a transfer and then the transfer occurs pursuant to that judgment. So that's the key thing, and I think it's important in these kind of cases that there is a bright line that the statute provides, that Harrison provides. That bright line is when the court issues a final judgment, or the board, whichever it is. It could be the court or the board.
What about Ohio Code 323.65J that defines that until the right and equity of redemption terminated at the end of the 28-day period window, the county had not, in terms of that statute, taken Beaver Street's property without paying for it? Isn't that the statutory injunction, taking the property without paying for it?
Well, again, it's when did they know or have reason to know that that had been ordered? The final decision was issued by the board. That's when it was ordered to be transferred in lieu of sale.
How does that satisfy the statutory injunction that looks to taking property without paying for it? Didn't that occur after the redemption period had ended?
Right. I have two answers to that question, so if I can get to the second part. But the first is that 323.78B is the operative statute that orders a transfer. No further act is required to transfer the property. So all we're doing at that point is implementing the judgment that's been issued by the Board of Revision. But I want to emphasize...
But let me back up. How does that satisfy the United States Supreme Court's Nick case, which says that a property owner has an actionable Fifth Amendment takings claim when the government takes his property without paying for it? Isn't that what the Supreme Court says is the time frame?
So again, their theory for when they didn't pay for it is based upon the fact that it had been ordered transferred in lieu of sale. They're only asking for the opportunity to sell the property at a public auction. And it's the transfer without a sale that resulted in the alleged taking. That's, if you read their complaint, that's what they're alleging, okay? So what Nick says is the final decision standard is still the ripeness standard. We're gonna overrule the administrative or the requirement to exhaust your administrative remedies. But we're going to require you still to satisfy the final decision standard. So the final decision standard is the standard by which a takings claim arises. And what the Supreme Court held in Pactel, which is a more recent case, is that that's de facto finality. They're not even requiring it to be a stringent standard. They're allowing you, Once a final decision has been issued, in this case it's clear that that was a final judgment when that was issued, that's when the rights accrue. But I can I get the second part of the answer? Because I don't think even if the alternative, even if the if you have the 28-day period, that that actually helps them in this case. Because as we point out in our briefs, the bankruptcy filing of the bankruptcy petition did not toll the statute of limitations. And so while the board and the prosecutor's office may have thought that they needed to do an order to do anything about reactivating the actual transfer of the property, the fact is that they were not making any findings about the statute of limitations. That was not litigated below, and there was no admissions regarding the statute of limitations. So when you look at the statute of limitations...
I'm not quite following you. Yeah. Why wouldn't they... Or maybe there's case law that would answer the question, but why wouldn't a bankruptcy filing told the statute of limitation? The parties couldn't do anything to dispose of or change the status of the property after the bankruptcy filing and the automatic stay from the bankruptcy court without some further order or disposition of the bankruptcy court. It would seem that that actually would toll on the statute.
Well, this court addressed that issue in In Re Glenn, which is what we cited in our statute. A statutory redemption period is not tolled by the filing of the bankruptcy petition, and that was also followed by the Second Circuit in Carney, which explained that in the context of...
Was that a foreclosure case like this?
Carney was a case dealing with strict tax foreclosure statute out of the state of Vermont, and they followed the reasoning of In Re Glenn, and basically it gets into a fairly complicated bankruptcy analysis. But the key is that the appellant...
Well, that wasn't our circuit. Vermont? What court was that?
That was the Second Circuit. And they followed Sixth Circuit precedent on that question. That's In Re Glenn. And I briefed that in our brief.
We saw it in the brief. The concern is that you did not go to the bankruptcy court and say time has expired, right? There was no request to lift the stay because the time it has expired, right?
Again, we're talking about that. That is right, but we're talking about implementing the judgment, right? So the judgment had already been issued. They were simply trying to make sure that they could implement the judgment. So they weren't arguing that.
Then is why didn't the BOR come in when the 60 days had run and said, okay, we're taking the property now? Because instead, they issued an order that says, now that the redemption period is concluded, we're going to transfer the property. Are they not caught with their own definition of what the time appropriate for transfer is?
Well, Your Honor, they never argued collateral estoppel or judicial estoppel or any argument that somehow we were bound by arguments that were made below regarding when the...
Well, I don't know that they have to argue this. The question is, what does the order say? And the order says, now that the 28 days have run, we have the property and can transfer it. Go do it.
But,
right?
Again, it's implementing the judgment, and two, it doesn't change the fact that for statute of limitations purposes, In Re Glenn and In Re Carney apply with respect to the filing of a bankruptcy petition did not toll the 28-day period. And that is the law that should be followed. The district court did find that the filing of the bankruptcy petition did not change the statute of limitations analysis, because even under the bankruptcy law, it was not timely filed. They did not appeal that portion of the judge's order. And we would submit that if the court wants to look at the law as to whether, if the court went, we think that the final decision controls, but if the court wants to look at when the alternative right of redemption period expired, bankruptcy, their whole argument is that the bankruptcy petition somehow tolled that period when the law says that it does not. It does not toll the period. So even if the filing of the bankruptcy petition did not toll the 28-day period, so even if the 28-day period was somehow controlling, we submit that it's not.
Counsel, you might want to wrap up. Your red light's been on for a long time.
Oh, well, thank you, Your Honor. We do believe that the trial court got this right in terms of following Harrison, which establishes a bright line standard that says when the board applies the regulations to the property, it has issued a final decision, and that's the final decision that the Supreme Court has said applies when you're determining when a takings claim arises. We ask the court to follow that law and not create new law that would somehow create different standards in this context. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you very much. We actually agree that Harrison doesn't need to be changed at all. We think Harrison does apply, and let me read a little bit from this.
Before you go down that path, could you address the heart of the argument that the county just made, that you lose anyway under the bankruptcy code?
Well, first of all, I do think there is judicial estoppel here because they argued as to when that.
Let me frame it a different way.
Itself.
His argument is that. Right. In the district court ruled you lose anyway under the bankruptcy court, and his follow-up argument to that is you didn't appeal that portion of the district court order.
The bankruptcy court, I mean, that is under 11 U.S.C. Section 108, and I would like to point out that these limitations are for the trustee. This court knows that property goes into the bankruptcy court and then the trustee has control of it, not the debtor at that point, because the trustee is reorganizing the property, making these decisions. And if you read 108, it says the trustee may only file, cure, or perform. This is 108B1, up until the end of such period, including suspension of a period occurring on or after the commencement of the case. Well, the suspension was the period for redemption. It's the redemption period that we're talking about, not the statute of limitations for 1983.
As interesting as this is, let me take you back to the question. His argument is the district court ruled against you on this issue involving the bankruptcy code and that you didn't appeal it. So did you appeal it or didn't you appeal it?
Well, We appealed the judge's ruling on the redemption. I'm not getting your question, I guess.
Let me describe it this way. It seems to me one can describe the district court order as in the alternative. He said it's a final order when the board issued its order and you lose. But he also said you lose anyway under the bankruptcy code because you still were late the way you calculated under the bankruptcy code. Now, when lots of times judges will issue an order that has several different components to it, and you have to tell us which ones you're appealing. And the county says you didn't appeal the alternative holding, so you lose anyway.
Well, I believe through our argument that we're, our argument, I'm a little bit confused by that, but I think our argument does deal, I mean, the bankruptcy stay is in place, and the county admits that throughout this case, or at the beginning of this case. You know, that's their order. It admits that the stay is in place and is ineffective. I don't think they can argue against their own argument. They're arguing against their own position, Your Honor. That's completely inappropriate. That's what I would say about that. And we did argue that judicial estoppel, so I think that's the point. I know that's not, I'd have to think about that, but I mean, the bankruptcy orders, again, I think they're through 108. I think that deals with the trustee and not the debtor.
I guess what I'm struggling with is what does all of this depend on? And I'm struggling. I see the arguments about the bankruptcy court and I understand that, but in the end, well, I need to know whether you think the Board of Revision second order after the 28-day redemption period, which is the issue in this case, the Board of Revision, that their decision is the issue that matters and their order is the issue that governs.
I think this may go to my answer is going to go to yours a little bit, I think, as well. The issue in this case is injury. It's about injury. It's injury when the property's taken. It's injury when my client knows it's going to be taken. It's injury when the 28 days has run. Up until that time, like I said in my beginning, he could have gone to the county and said, here's the money. Here's our taxes, right up until January 21st. The injury occurred when that redemption period ran, as the county admits. So the focus needs to be on the redemption period and on the injury to the client. There was no injury until January 21st.
Does that argument appear anywhere in Harrison, injury?
Yes, it does.
Harrison says, must be a final decision to take the property, meaning it's known to a reasonable degree of certainty what will happen to the property.
We agree 100% with that, because when you knew...
Does the word injury appear some other place?
Yeah, because there's a reasonable degree of certainty that he can't redeem it.
Does the word injury appear in Harrison to set the standard? It's a simple question.
It does, in the sense that Harrison recognized the...
Not in the sense. Does the word injury...
No.
Okay, that's all I'm asking.
The issue is, the final decision is when it's known to a reasonable degree of certainty. This is Harrison. When is it known? Right up until the 21st, lots of things could have happened. A new loan, a new investor, a sale of the property could occur, and my client would receive the proceeds of the sale up until the 21st of January. That's what I would say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and the case is submitted.